Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to show number 148 from Engage for Success. The theme of our show this afternoon is one of those conundrums. It's about the topic of happiness and engagement, and we're going to be talking about differentiating happiness from true engagement. Can you? Should you? Is it possible? What comes first, happiness or engagement, or does it matter? And to help me sort of unpick this afternoon, I'm very pleased to welcome this afternoon's guest, which is Robert Ordiva from OC Tanner. He's People and Operations Director there. Having joined them in August 2014, and before that, very interestingly, was HR head at Fulham Football Club. So welcome to the show, Robert. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for joining us. So I'm your host for this afternoon's show. I'm Jo Moffitt, and regular listeners will know who I am. New ones may not. So I'm MD and founder of Woodread, and we are a creative agency that work with clients to help them use their brand to engage their people on the inside. So we believe that the brand inside is as important as the brand outside and is a very powerful driver of employee engagement. Or maybe by the end of the next half hour, I'll be talking about employee happiness. I don't know. Who's to say? But anyway, Robert's joining us to talk all about that with me. So looking forward to that. Before we get into that debate, though, Robert, can you just give us a little bit of an intro to yourself? I mentioned that you've been at Fulham Football Club, and obviously you've been with OC Tanner for sort of 18 months or so. But can you just give us a little bit of your professional background and how you got to where you are?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I started my career in retail and then moved across into football. I was at Fulham Football Club for 8 years and I was actually a client of OC Tanner's Enjoyed what OC Tanner did and what they were about so much that I shifted and moved my career over to OC Tanner, as you say, about 18 months ago.
Rightio. Okay. And tell us a little bit about them as an organisation.
Sure. Well, OC Tanner are, they're almost 90 years old, actually. I think next year is our 90th year. And we are leaders in the field of employee appreciation. So we work closely with our clients. We have about 8,000 clients all over the globe. And we work closely with them to help them engage their people through recognition efforts, effectively. So recognising effort, rewarding results. And we help them with long service and celebrating careers. So we kind of do a lot of research, a lot of thought leadership, but ultimately we help our clients create engaging and happy workplaces.
Okay, all right. So very similar field of interest then to ours, and certainly those of our listeners as well, I'm sure. So tell me, I'm fascinated. You spent 8 years with Fulham Football Club, and football and HR. That strikes me as quite an interesting mix. I know it's not quite what we're going to be talking about this afternoon, but can you just tell us a little bit more about your time there? What were the challenges and how did you how did that go?
Well, you know what, it's certainly very different to my retail background, but actually in terms of the people piece and the HR, actually what was required there was very similar to any other HR role. Very wide range of people, everything from, you know, elite athletes to kind of casual weekend staff. Very strong kind of values-based culture. It's a pretty traditional business. And it was sort of the eight most successful years in their history, which I'm sure is just coincidence that I was there. But,
don't be shy.
Pretty well off the pitch and pretty well off the pitch. You know, European run, highest league finish, and we won awards for our match day experience. So lots of work, certainly lots around engagement and developing, and particularly around our casual workforce, some of whom, you know, we would only see them once a fortnight. So some good HR challenges. It was a fascinating business to work in.
Yes, no, I can imagine. So, yes, the sort of people that just turn up to do the match day stuff, presumably they've got other jobs that they do the rest of the time, and trying to get them to engage with what you're about is is a bit of a challenge. But are they all fans of the club? I mean, is that the start point? Is that where it begins?
I think they were fans of the club from a place where they worked, or certainly that's what we aimed for. But of course, the workforce pool, if you like, in London is very varied, and Fulham isn't necessarily the biggest club for followers in London. So, we had fans for all different clubs, and I suppose our aim was to make them fans of our club as a place to work. They have lots of choices about where to work. There's lots of events going on during the week, and we needed them to come in to Fulham to understand our values, understand what matchday experience we were aiming for. And we had a very small window once a fortnight in which to do that. So it was an interesting challenge.
No, I can imagine. And you said you won an award for being the best home team, or the team that gave the best welcome or something.
Yeah, I think the title was the warmest welcome in the Premier League, which we were very proud of. There's a huge amount of competition, as you can imagine, and lots of clubs spending lots of money. Old Fulham, small Fulham down by the river, punching above their weight. So we were really proud of that.
Right, so that's the warmest welcome to away visitors and away fans, then, is it?
Yeah,
to all fans.
So the Premier League would send mystery visitors, effectively, and they would assess home fan areas, away fan areas, disabled areas, all sorts of stuff, and ultimately they would rank each club, and we were very proud to win in 2013.
Right. Oh, good. Okay. And so you left. So as you said, OC Tanner were, or you when you were at Fulham, you were a client of OC Tanner, and you then joined them in the summer of 2014. And we're going to be talking this afternoon about happiness and employee engagement, something that both things really that are kind of high up the agenda and cause for a reasonable amount of debate, I think. So, as I said at the beginning, it's a little bit chicken and the egg, isn't it? Which comes first? Does one drive the other? And if so, which? Is there any difference? So I suppose I've got to ask you to start with, how would you define each of these terms? How would you define happiness, employee happiness, and how would you define employee engagement?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure they're as separate as you might otherwise think. You know, engagement is a term that I think business has really adopted, and always sounds like it's about performance. It's about getting increased performance or discretionary effort. Whereas the word happiness tends to feel, I guess, more experiential. It's more about how you're feeling. But I think the reality is that they're really pretty close. You know, I'm not sure I've met many people who are hugely engaged but unhappy, or hugely happy but disengaged. I think quite where one starts and the other one finishes, I'm not sure. But you know, work is such a big part of our lives that actually, you know, a big part of being happy, certainly in my experience, is having a job, having some work which is engaging. So I'm not sure that's really answered the question, but it feels like two words for a very similar feeling.
So they're kind of intertwined in your view. One feeds the other, and they're not that far apart.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I talk more from experience than any kind of in-depth research. But the people that I work with that are engaged are happy. You know, and they're happy perhaps largely because their work is engaging. So I think it's rare to find them sort of totally separate. But happiness, of course, covers lots of things, work and non-work. But work is such a big part of life that having an engaging role, working in an engaging environment must impact your overall happiness.
I wonder whether, it's interesting actually, because I was chatting to somebody this morning about the fact that I was going to be talking to you on this topic this afternoon. And we were kind of wondering actually whether engagement as a term isn't a term that has been, we're sort of being a bit mischievous here, but is engagement a term that has been crafted in order to sell this scientifically to financial directors and leadership teams? Because if you actually talked about employee happiness all the time, people would see it as too lightweight and fluffy and silly, you know? So we actually have to dress happiness up in a more scientific term.
I think you're right to a certain extent. I think if you break down engagement to, you know, what are the key ingredients to engagement, you'd probably come up with the word happiness somewhere in there. But you're absolutely right. You know, when you're talking to the C-suite and you're talking to decision makers, perhaps engagement is slightly more acceptable term than happiness.
Yeah, you have to make it sound a bit hard, a bit more hard-nosed, don't you, really?
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah. I think one definitely, you know, happiness is definitely an ingredient of engagement.
Oh, absolutely. And so in terms of how you approach things at OC Tanner, so you're the people and operations director, and is that does that mean you've got responsibility for roughly how many people there then, Robert?
So we have in Europe, we're sort of mid 40s in terms of number, so we're not mm-hmm. huge in terms of number. And I look after everything except the finance team and the sales team. So the guys that are, mm-hmm. you know, working with clients day in, day out in our customer service team, our buyers mm-hmm. who help kind of source awards and products for our clients. Mm-hmm. And of course, our fantastic distribution and logistics team who are busy sending awards and recognition products all over the world.
Right. And are the people that you're responsible for, are they scattered or are they all in one place or...?
In terms of Europe, we have two locations in the UK and one in Germany. Mm-hmm. But our head office is in Salt Lake City in Utah. We have teams in Canada, Australia, Singapore, India. So we're pretty spread as an organisation.
Pretty global, yeah. And so how do you approach engagement, employee engagement and happiness then at OC Tanner? Do you differentiate? What kinds of things do you do to promote those sorts of outcomes?
Well, the nice thing about working for a company like OC Tanner is it's our business to help our clients create great workplaces. So we have to walk the talk.
Yes.
So we do.
Yeah,
a lot
you're
of
not
work
like cobblers, our... not cobblers children, then.
No, absolutely not. You know, we're very lucky. It's a great place to work. I think one of the things that we do in particular is we appreciate and we recognise and we know how important that is, but we really focus on the why. So, you know, I think if you think about what we're helping our clients do, we're helping them recognise someone that's done great work. We're helping to make someone else's day that bit happier or that bit more rewarding. And, you know, every parcel that leaves the distribution centre, every keynote piece of training that we deliver is helping to make workplaces better for someone else. And we work particularly hard at OC Tanner at making sure our people understand that, they understand that their role is about, you know, making people's day effectively. It's not about packing boxes or buying stuff or even, you know, answering phone calls. So we work hard on that. We're very kind of, you know, we're very values-driven. It's still a family-owned business, so you know,
it?
We try uh-huh. and even though we're pretty big and pretty global, we still try and remember those things that are really important to our business.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it is really important to practice what you preach, isn't it? But I think that's interesting you're saying, talking about focusing on the why. That's very much playing to the first enabler of the Engage for Success 4 enablers, isn't it? Which is around being able to tell a good strategic narrative that people understand why they're getting out of bed in the morning. What's the purpose? As you say, it's not about packing boxes. It's actually about making people's working lives better.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of it. You know, once people can understand their role and understand the difference that they're making, engaging in their work becomes that much easier. You know, I think when it gets to November, December, and it's absolutely crazy, and the warehouse is just stacked full of boxes. You know, if you ask the team down there. I would like to think most of them look at the sheer volume that's going out and think, you know, that those are more people getting recognised by their employers, that you know, they're more people that are being thanked for what they do. And so that, you know, that increased workload just drives us on.
Yes, yes. Interesting. And you're responsible for the people that you described in OC Tanner, but do you get involved sometimes with clients' workforces at all? Do you ever sort of share your insights and experience more widely?
Certainly, we We do on occasion. I mean, some of our clients are really interested, particularly in the work that I did within football and how we used appreciation there. But we have so many great people, both in the US and in Europe, who, you know, we're very lucky. We've been going for a long time. We have some great success stories, you know, some great case studies, some great clients. So we have plenty to share with our clients. And,
yes.
You know, the clients that we have, they're great partners. They love to learn and learn from each other. So, we network them as well.
Mm.
And we help them make a difference.
Okay. And how do you measure what you do within the organization in terms of the impact of what you do to help get people engaged and happy?
Sure. Well, we do an employee engagement survey like lots of companies do. But we're pretty lucky. We're not huge in Europe. So for the most part, we just listen lots.
Right.
You know, doing the survey is great, and it helps us on a global scale kind of understand where the key areas to focus are. We're awarded number 40 on the Fortune 100 Best Companies to Work For list. So it was worth doing the survey for that alone, I guess. And it's nice we had 27 of our clients joined us on that list. But the reality is that actually we listen lots. You know, engagement is something that I think good managers and good leaders can feel it. You know, they know when their people are genuinely engaged. They know when their teams are happy. So although we use the survey, if I'm honest, I really rely on my leaders, those people that are the closest to really understand what's going on and feedback. And we just have to be very honest, you know, where people, you know, need some help to get engaged with their work, need some help with reframing the role. You know, we need to listen and we need to help them.
Okay. Yeah, so really the measurement is there, but actually in reality it's a kind of gut feel sort of sense of what you get from listening and talking to people and a sense of what they really feel rather than necessarily the hard metrics.
Yeah, I mean, look, the metrics will help tell you things that people aren't necessarily being upfront about, but, you know, our challenge as leaders is to be as approachable as possible so that people feel comfortable talking to us because, you know, an annual engagement survey or a twice-yearly engagement survey, it's just not often enough to be listening to people. So I think that's the responsibility of all local leaders, and that's really what we try and do.
It's interesting, actually, because that saying it's not often enough to do it annually or biannually to get a sense, and I think you're absolutely right. And it just prompts a question that occurred to me as you were talking, when you were talking about the seasonality of the business. You were saying how at Christmas time at the end of the year when it's really, really, really busy and the warehouse is stacked with boxes and one of the questions it prompted me to wonder about was there's obviously a seasonality to your business in terms of the sort of the annual awards round of recognition internally, but there's increasingly, isn't there, a sense of the need to recognise, or I think to use your terminology, appreciate people in a more, that's much more of an ongoing thing, isn't it? It's not just for the end of the year awards.
No, absolutely. And many of our clients have programs where they award points for great work. And actually some of the peak that we see towards the end of the year are people that have accumulated points throughout the year and have chosen to spend them at a time. Perhaps some people re-gift them. Some people kind of buy that extra special thing that maybe they wouldn't otherwise buy for themselves at a time when they're normally buying for others. So we do see, we certainly do see kind of end of year banquets and that type of thing. But the vast majority of that kind of seasonal push is people redeeming the points that they've achieved for great work throughout the year.
Throughout the year, right. Okay. And so do you think, would you say there is a measurable link between employee happiness and recognition or appreciation, whichever term we want to use?
Yeah, I think undoubtedly. I mean, if we're all honest, I think we all feel happy when we are appreciated. You know, when we're recognised, and I think we do as children, and I'm not sure we change that much as adults. We might think we do, but that kind of, you know, that desire for someone to really appreciate and value what we do, I don't think really goes away. It was interesting. I saw some research today that someone sent me. It was done by AAT, the accounting guys, and they surveyed a couple of thousand people, and they talked to them about what the most important thing in terms of workplace happiness, and you know, recognition mm-hmm. was second, responsibility was top, recognition was second, pay was somewhere like fourth.
Right.
So I think, you know, I think being recognised does make people happier at work, and help people engage. You know, I think the one thing that's important about recognition, and certainly the work that I did at Fulham, when you appreciate someone and you recognise them in front of their peers, as well as making them feel great and helping them celebrate their success, actually what you're doing each time is you're showing their colleagues, look, this is what great work looks like. You know, mm-hmm. this is what engaging with our values looks like.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it certainly became for us a way to develop and reinforce and ensure that people are, you know, constantly reminded of the things that are important. So, I guess in our line of work, I'm perhaps biased, but I certainly believe that appreciation is a very important factor in happiness and happiness in engagement.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, very grand, complicated programs. You know, when we talk about appreciation, it's as much as a thank you. You know, an authentic, timely, and relevant thank you can make all the difference. It doesn't have to be material.
No, that's true, isn't it?
If you were to look
and
at
it's
the
also,
companies
I think,
that sort of recognise... Sorry.
Yeah, go on, carry on.
I was going to say, if you look at the companies that are recognised as being great places to work for, my guess is that people there feel appreciated.
And I think it's interesting, isn't it, because the absence of recognition and the absence of appreciation could be equally as damaging, if not more, than the positive. You know, it kind of almost outweighs the positives of doing it right. Is the absence of it can be terribly, terribly damaging, can't it?
Yeah, and you know what? We started, certainly, just going back to Fulham for a moment, you know, we started there, really, we were experts at catching people doing the wrong things. We were really very good at picking up, and we were very good at spending time investigating and looking into why things went wrong. So, you know, initially people said to me, you know, we talked about appreciation, says, oh, I just don't have time for this stuff. And I said, well, look, you know, if you have time to deal with things when they go wrong, then you definitely have time to deal with things when they go well. So, you know, lots of businesses aren't good at this stuff. And when you don't appreciate, you tend to perhaps be the other way as well. You're pretty good at catching people when they fail. So, you know, what we try and do is help people to catch people doing the right things.
Get people into good habits, really. It's a habit, isn't it? I mean, I used to work for a manager years and years ago who didn't even say hello to his team when he came into work in the morning. You know, I mean, talk about lack of recognition in a very basic way. You know, you might as well have been invisible for the what it felt like, really. So it is about instilling good habits, isn't it? Particularly in line managers. Back to this whole idea that people, you know, that relationship is so really, really important, isn't it? That they know how to do a timely thank you can really make all the difference.
And I think it's an important part of a manager's job role. And if our leaders weren't dealing with areas of poor performance, we'd probably be quick to speak up. But as you say, all too often managers, you know, aren't focusing on recognition and appreciation. And that's, you know, it's a key part of performance management.
Absolutely. So actually, you know, you were talking about the survey that somebody had sent you today, and I was also talking earlier with somebody about something in Bhutan that they call the gross national happiness, which is something they focus on. They focus on that rather than GDP, which obviously we're all entirely familiar with. They focus in Bhutan on gross national happiness. And I wonder what your thoughts are about that. Should we start focusing on money and productivity and bottom line for corporate success measure? Or, you know, should we start actually measuring happiness and using that?
Well, I think it's interesting. You know, my gut feel is one probably leads to the other. If you have a great culture and your people are happy and engaged, then the financials will follow. But you know, my knowledge of Bhutan is really limited. From what I understand,
yeah, fair enough.
Measure. The focuses actually of what they measure are pretty similar to what you'd look at for judging whether an organization is successful. You know, they look at things like cultural values and, you know, do people feel that it's good governance? Is the environment right? So actually, you know, the measures of happiness and what we would perhaps in business talk about as engagement survey, I'm not sure they're miles apart.
So sometimes it might just come down to choices of terminology rather than fundamentals in terms of difference of approach.
Yeah, and I guess one of my key principles is that the why is as important. The how is as important as the what. Mm. So you can get results, but actually, you don't survive 90 years. You don't remain at the sort of at the top of your game unless you really stick to your values and you are mindful about how you undertake your work. So, you know, businesses that just look at results and aren't interested in engagement or happiness or the way in which those results are achieved, you know, I think are likely to be shorter term successes. And I think Bhutan probably has it right. Focused on happiness, have people engaged and ready to give their all, and the rest will follow.
Yeah, yes, let's hope so. Let's hope so. So, you know, there's a big debate, isn't there, between does engagement deliver productivity and success, or does employee happiness, whatever we want to call it. What do you think? Do you think there's a link between? I'm going to stop talking about happiness now and talk about engagement. Is there a link in your view between engagement and productivity?
Yeah, I think there is. I think you know, the sheer number of businesses now that are really focused on engagement, and all the various methods and all the various businesses that are out there helping people with engagement, I think there's enough evidence to show that it links to productivity. You know, at its most basic, the companies that are best to work for will attract the best talent. And logic tells you that the best talent is ultimately going to help your business become successful. So I think there's, you know, it's now become more accepted. I sometimes just wish we wouldn't surround it in so much jargon.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I quite like the term happiness. It works for me, and I think there are enough businesses focusing on, as I say, you know, keeping their workforces positive and engaged that. It's definitely showing that it makes a difference.
So, what would you say are the sort of basic ground rules to keeping your workforce happy, Robert?
Oh, okay. Well, I'd say first of all, it starts with, you know, it's around the leaders. You know, they need to talk to their people. It's about, you know, being human, listening lots, and you know, people love to succeed. So when we help highlight great work, We're not only helping them celebrate what they do, but as I said before, we're helping to show others what great work looks like. So I think that talk to people, listen lots, and appreciate your people would be, I think the key things, or they're the key things that we work with.
Righto. And be clear about why you're doing what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's really important. And that's really important, you know, right from the recruitment stage. Sometimes we become a bit tied up in job descriptions and, you know, tests and all that sort of stuff. Actually, a really good conversation about the why and about the values can sometimes be, you know, the most important piece of a recruitment process. You know, bring people in who are, you know, already focused on the why of what we deliver. And I think that just sets you up really nicely for a new team member.
Yes. And how do you, it's interesting actually, because I think that's really, really important. You get people in who are already aligned to the values, and you know, you're halfway there, aren't you? But you're talking about great a lot, and talking about great work. And, you know, if there was, how would you define that in our sort of closing seconds of the show, Robert? What does great, how do you define great work? What does that mean?
Well, it's probably a bit of OC Tanner jargon, but when we talk about great work, we talk about work that makes a difference that people love.
Okay.
And it's as simple as that.
So
that's
work that makes a difference that people love is having a sense of purpose about what you're doing then.
Absolutely. It all links nicely in.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Well, thank you very much indeed, Robert. That's been really interesting. And as always, our 30 minutes has just run away with us. And all it remains for me to do is to say thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. And thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And I will say good night and thank you. And thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Jo.
Bye-bye now.
Bye now.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.